Save big money on your summer project at Menards. Transform your garage with rock-solid floor coatings. Complete your project with a showroom-quality finish in 1 weekend. A one-car kit covers up to 250 square feet. Get everything you need to complete your project with rock-solid floor coatings. Our knowledgeable team is ready to help bring your dreams to life, 1 gallon at a time. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
But don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire.
Good morning and welcome to Playing with Fire, Long Island's only food, wine, and lifestyle show. I'm your host, Tom Shortell, and I'm here with co-host, producer, and friend Stu Schreger. Good morning, Stu.
Good morning, Tom. How are you?
I'm perfect, almost.
That's great.
Yeah, a little overweight, but other than that, am I right?
Well, the summer continues to move on. And here we are, I guess the summer begins more or less Memorial Day weekend, so that means you have June, July, and August, but people sort of assimilate the summer as July and August. I guess schools are out and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I know in the East End, we don't really start until, you get a little play Memorial Day if it's nice, you know, and then it goes back into hibernation again until the kids get out of school, and then, you know, it's mayhem.
So let's talk a little bit about the seasonality of the fruits and vegetables of the East End. So I had mentioned the other day that I had gone out east, or was coming back from the ferry and stopped off. And I tell you, the weather being what it is, I left my mom's peaches in the car during the day. And they were stewed
peach puree
in more ways than one. When I got back.
Well, you stewed them, S-T-U-D-E-D. Yeah.
But mom had another word, but it began S-C. And she said they were not salvageable.
Yeah, yeah.
I said, but mom, one was like still hard. She goes, and it still is.
It's funny, you know, and that was the week it was like 150 degrees out, you know, whatever. Yeah, fruit doesn't, it's like, children and dogs, you shouldn't leave them in the car. You know, fruit's the same.
So my question to you is, when I was out that way, it was corn and tomatoes and strawberries.
Yeah.
When does that sort of come to an end and the next chapter begin of growing fruit and vegetables out east?
Well, tomatoes generally start in July. That's when they become, rich in flavor or whatever. But that'll go right through until September. You know, corn's an interesting thing. Corn is almost like a barometer of, summer fruit and vegetables. Because when you get corn, you can get it pretty good into like the first, sometimes even the second week of September. After that, the corn automatically browns when you cook it. Like, it's telling you it's over, you know. It's the oddest thing. I don't know why that is. Maybe the sugars are different. I don't know the science of it all. But the bottom line is, you know, you'll start to see corn won't hold up, you know. It'll start to get brown in the pan, you know, where it doesn't in the summer. So it'll go till September. So the tomatoes run right through the beginning of October, and then they start to get, you know, they start to finish up. You know, stone fruit's pretty big now. You know, you got peaches and plums, and but they go into, you know, again, into September, and then all of a sudden, October, you start to see pears, quince, you know, the fall fruits come out, you know, grapes, obviously. But, everything has a time to every purpose under heaven, man, you know, as the song says. Everybody has a season, you know. I guess everybody does have a season. I'm in the late fall.
That's kind of biblical.
Early winter here on this side. But and it's kind of important to, you know, it's not critical because of, you know, we stopped eating seasonally as a culture with the advent of airplanes and, you know, all that stuff you can, you know. I knew a guy who was, I won't tell you his name, but he was a stupid wealthy guy who was married to a stupid wealthy woman. And they used to fly raspberries up from like Chile in, you know, the middle of the winter. If she wanted raspberries, he would charter a plane, you know, and bring raspberries up. It was nuts. But bottom line is, you know, you know, to eat seasonally is to really take advantage of the peak flavors of fruits and vegetables. I mean, you know, that's why, you know, you don't serve tomatoes that aren't cooked in January, you know. You know, obviously the steakhouses do all of that, and you can get fairly decent stuff, you know, from hothouse grown tomatoes from Chile and down south or whatever. But they're not the same. They're not the same like the local stuff. So when you have a you know, a tomato that was grown within, you know, I don't know what they consider local, 300 miles or whatever. But, you know, there was a farm, I can't remember the name of it, when I was in Montauk, when I had the restaurant there. And I used to get all my tomatoes from the guy. He was half a mile away, you know. And they were just gorgeous and, you know, full of flavor and sparkling visually. They were just fabulous, you know. So, you can't get that in a supermarket.
So let's dig into tomatoes for a second. So I'm going to ask some pretty basic questions.
You
but,
don't have to dig. They're right on the vine.
But I'm not as astute as you. First of all, you pick a tomato from the plant, mm-hmm. and there's the stem part that I would assume is considered the top.
Yeah.
Now, when you're preparing a salad or whatever, not dicing a tomato, but when you're preparing a salad for either sections or slices, mm-hmm. are you supposed to cut out the core?
Yeah.
Or do you just cut that out? A slice and
no, you
can be
do
done
either
with
or. It depends on how frugal you are. You know, if you don't care about the slice, then you know, cut the thing off and forget about it. But most people just core it out. You know, and you save some of that tomato there.
And what's is there any difference between slicing a tomato and quartering a tomato?
No, just visually. You know, I mean, you can't quarter it and put it on a sandwich, right? So that's it. Depends on the use, you know. But it's not going to change the flavor much. And tomatoes, you know, I did a dish the other night. We took a yellowfin tuna, which was from Montauk, actually. And it was gorgeous. I mean, my fish guy, Bart, he's got Gray Bar Fish in Copeg. And I think they do retail if you're ever there. You know, you can go. It's a wholesale place. You know, you're not going to see a counter. But I think you can go in and buy things there. Anyway, he's fabulous as far as the fishmonger goes. And he sent me some tuna that was stupid cool. And I blackened it, you know, I just blackened the outside. And I served it on this, I don't want to call it a salad, but it was a bunch of beautiful heirloom tomatoes. I had golden tomatoes. I had the German ones. I had the green zebra stripe tomatoes. We had three colors of the cherry tomatoes. And I just tossed them all in a vinaigrette with a little lemon zest and some red onion, olive, and some capers. And just served it on that tomato and a lot of basil. And it was just, it was kind of like the essence of summer. You have this fish that's swimming right off the shore here. You have all these tomatoes that are grown on Long Island in New Jersey. And it was just, it just said summer to me. And I think that's, you know, the kind of eating that I want to do. And hopefully my customers too. But it's really kind of a, you know, it's a fun way to cook, and it's also a fun way to eat. And I think that, you know, if people would pursue that a little more, you know, if they would do a little more green market shopping and a little less, is A&P still around? I don't do
no
shopping, but you know, I think a little more less supermarket stuff and a little more farm stand things. You'd really kind of see the difference between. You know, the tomatoes, the supermarket, in their defense, they have to buy these things that last. They're going to be on the shelf for a while, you know. But the markets don't. They pick the, you know, fruit, and they sell it that day and hopefully 2 days or whatever, and then do it again, you know. So you get the essence of the vegetable. I know that there's, you know, the farm stands out east right now have peaches. And if you go, you know, some of the Long Island peaches are some of the ugliest peaches I've ever seen in my life. But the flavor is insane, you know. It's so much different than the stuff that you get in the supermarket. So I would encourage people to, you know, to see if there's a green market guy or farm stand guy or somebody selling fresh vegetables near you. I think that it's worth the investment of time and effort. You know, you can't do it every day. I get it. But, you know, if you live on the East End, they're all over the place. Up here, not so much. But you got rot camps. You got there's a bunch of farms up in on the North Shore there that you can get tomatoes from, and You know, the other thing, too, is when you bring tomatoes home, don't refrigerate them. You know, leave them on the counter. The refrigeration kind of changes the flavor of them a little bit, you know. It's almost like wine. It's too cold. You can't really taste it, you know. But I think that, you know, if you leave them on the counter and, you know, don't buy too many, obviously. You don't want them to rot on you. But you'll see a big difference in the flavor.
Interesting. So you mentioned A&P as a supermarket, and my mind went to, what does A&P stand for?
Atlantic and Pacific.
Yeah, that's what I, so it's actually the Great Atlantic and Pacific Tea Company.
Yeah.
A name from
the past. I see these memes on internet all the time. If you were born on Long Island, name a restaurant that's not around anymore.
Yes.
I can name 100. And, oh, while we're on the subject, very sad note. Have you ever been to Nonna Bella in Garden City?
No.
I used to work in that location 100 years ago. A friend of mine who was a football player for the Baltimore Colts, Don McCauley. I don't know if you remember the name. A very talented guy, great football player, and sweetheart of a man. He was a Garden City native, and he opened up McCauley's in this location in Garden City on Franklin Avenue. And it was a very successful place. I actually tended bar there for them because a friend of mine was his partner, and somehow I wound up covering some shifts for him way back. And anyway, the place had gone through a couple of changes. And Nino, the chef of Nonna Bella, he took it over. I don't remember where he came from, but he had a pretty stellar Italian restaurant background. And his food was really good. I used to eat there whenever I was. I get my hair cut, you know, like twice a year in the place next door. So I would stop in there and, you know, have some dinner after I got my hair cut. And he closed. He just up and had it. And I was asking the person who told me what was the problem. And he said he just, between the help issues and the costs of everything, and he just gave it up. He said, I'm tired. I'm done. I can't do it anymore. He had a gelato business also that was kind of cool. He used to make these great gelatos and gave that up too. He just couldn't find the help to, you know, to make it sustainable. You know, and it's the same story I hear from everybody. I mean, I don't know what's going on economically here, but it's not a good time for restaurants. It's sad, you know. So if you love your local restaurant, I'd say support it if you can, because you may not be around forever.
There you go. So just to go back to our tomato discussion, I randomly chose a tomato plant that had old orange golden cherry tomatoes.
Right.
Orange is my favorite color, so for whatever reason.
You know, yeah.
Has nothing to do with Syracuse, yeah, too. Yeah. It has nothing to do with the taste, I don't think, the color. But the only thing I did find in doing some research that an orange cherry tomato may offer a higher natural sugar content than many of the red varieties.
You know, I have a tomato dealer, Preferred Tomatoes. That's all he does is, you know, he grows them, he brings them in, whatever. And you know, when you taste like a Sweet 100, which is a little cherry tomato, as compared to the stuff you get like, you know, everyday commercial, it's night and day. I mean, they have a sweetness that the other ones don't
have. I'm telling you, this year I was very, very lazy. Instead of planting my tomatoes, they're still in the pots.
You bought them?
And they're still in front of my house. They never even made it into the backyard.
Uh-huh.
So when I walk out of my house in the morning, these orange tomatoes were just like calling my name.
Yeah.
And I'd grab one or two of them, and it was like candy.
Oh,
it was so delicious.
No, the difference is unbelievable. And you know, those of us who are, you know, I hate the term foodie because I'll tell you a story about that later. But the bottom line is the people who are really into food and you know, people who live to eat, you have two types. You got the eat to live and live to eat. You know, we're live to eat people, right? So when you have that thing about food, you want to explore those differences. They're tremendous. You know, a freshly grown, you know, like you say, orange cherry tomato compared to something you're going to find in the supermarket is completely different, you know, and it makes a huge difference in your salad. If you're, you know, like I said, I made this tomato salad to go under the tuna, and I thought it was the perfect summer dish. You got tomatoes, you got basil, you got red onions in there, you got some capers, you got a lemon. You know, it's just, it screams summer, you know what I mean?
It's funny you say that. Last night I was at an event with our friend Rob Rush. It was actually very much geographically Tom Shawdell. It was at the Syosset Cultural Arts Center in Syosset.
Mm-hmm.
And right near there was the former Cool Fish.
Oh, yeah.
And down the road is the Culinary Institute.
Yeah, yeah. But it's not there anymore, the cooking school.
I'm not sure. I just know that they hired a catering, a caterer,
right,
who came in and had a jacket on like that. So maybe it did move or whatever.
Oh,
maybe.
I don't know.
But when you were just talking about the tomatoes, I was backstage with Rob, and we spent the evening enjoying the company of Chad Smith from the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Yeah, great drummer.
And so there was food in the backstage area. And they had a fried chicken cutlet in a tomato sauce, but it had like half of a tomato, but the plum, not even plum, like plum cherry tomatoes.
Uh-huh.
And it was just like you said, it seemed so seasonal. It was, you know, just a nice change. It wasn't chicken parmesan.
Which is, you know, chicken parmesan is probably one of the most ordered dishes on Long Island. I mean, it's in every Italian restaurant, including mine. I mean, I put it on the menu at Amano because I had to. There's so many people screaming for it, you know. All right, you want chicken parmesan? You can't find chicken parmesan in Italy. It doesn't exist. It's an American dish.
That's funny because I have two of my police officer friends, Ricky and Carlo, are spending some time in Italy, and uh-huh. I'm going to have to ask them about that when they come back. But it was so funny because just in having conversations with Chad Smith. First of all, what's really funny is if you watch Saturday Night Live earlier in the season, I never thought about it, but him and Will Ferrell.
Oh, look exactly alike.
Right, and yeah. What's that term they call that?
Yeah, doppelganger.
Yeah, I mean, literally just crazy. So
I have one too. Did you ever see the guy on Deadliest Catch? The captain?
You're right.
Yeah. I never knew. I don't watch the show, you know, because I don't watch TV all that much. And somebody emailed me, Facebooked me, you know, with the picture and said, you know, I didn't realize he had a part-time job fishing, you know. It's hilarious.
What's so funny is
he's fatter, though.
Okay. Yeah. Great observation. Mm-hmm. But talking to Chad Smith, I mean, this is a pretty seasoned veteran drummer for the Red Hot Chili Peppers. Must have had all sorts of crazy things in his life or whatever. So I said, you know, he mentioned that he had kids like 24, 21, and 14 or something.
Yeah.
I said, well, tell me, you know, did the kids get a kick out of your Saturday Night Live thing? I mean, you know, you're all about being a musician, but it's something that's just culturally current.
Yeah, yeah.
So he said, yes, they very much did. But apparently before Chad came over to the Performing Arts Center, he had dinner at Chris and Tony's, which is a great Italian restaurant in the former Maneros in Syosset.
Yeah.
They come out of the Chris and Tony. Chris is the maitre d', or the owner, but he manages the restaurant.
Right.
Tony's the cook and spends most of his time in the kitchen.
Oh, yeah.
But they came out of the Mateo's and Roslyn world.
Right.
They
that family style thing there.
Yes, right? Yes. Yeah. Incredible, incredible restaurant. For some reason, Chris... who's the owner, is very involved in the entertainment industry. So mm-hmm. many times, if it's an actor or a musician that's in town, somehow they end up having dinner over at Chris and Tony's.
Please don't tell me they take a picture and stick it in the lobby.
Well, maybe.
I can't. What is
maybe.
That?
Maybe.
What is that?
But Chad went on to talk about that. He was at Chris and Tony's, and the portions were incredible, and he has so much food left over to bring out back home to the family in Montauk and everything. So kudos to Chris and Tony's. But he did mention their veal dish, and I don't know if it was chicken parmesan, but at least when he's on stage, he goes, "I had some chicken parmesan."
Oh yeah, yeah, the accent, you know. Yeah, it's a funny thing with dishes that become almost iconic. It's like, all roads lead to Caesar salad with grilled chicken. I mean, it's like, it's the ubiquitous, you know, thing that everybody seems to have. It's, I don't know. And how it hooked in, I don't know. I mean, I remember, you know, Caesar salad, when I was coming up in the restaurant business, you had all these like, sort of like Frenchy places that had tableside cooking and stuff like that. And they used to make the Caesar salad at the table, the whole thing. And then it went back into the kitchen, and somehow it got grilled chicken on it, and it never looked back. It's
no,
just,
I, my youth, I got to travel to some nice restaurants, and a table side prepared Caesar is incredible. And the one that comes to mind is there was a restaurant called North Shore Steakhouse over in Great Neck.
Northern Boulevard.
Yeah. And my daughter, when she was like probably 4 or 5 years old, looked like Shirley Temple.
Oh, yeah.
She had this long curly hair or whatever. And
cute.
We were, you know, new parents or whatever. If we went out to dinner, we didn't really usually have a babysitter. So we took her with us.
Yeah.
But I just remember sitting at the table and they would come over with the salad cart.
Yeah.
And just prepare it, you know. And it's just, there's just such a unique, delicious taste. I don't know if it's the mustard or...
Yeah, it's all of the above. The anchovy, capers,
it's just, you know. And we talk about it all the time here that, you know, raw egg, God forbid you eat a raw egg or whatever. But,
please. Everybody's so worried about
it. But it was just, it was so wonderful. And then there was some place, I traveled with my dad a lot, and it was Don something's Black Hawk in Chicago, and they had a spinning salad. So they had the wooden salad bowl sitting in a block of ice, and they would, again, make it like they would do a Caesar salad, and he would be spinning at the server. And it was just, it was a visual that can't be forgotten. I actually went on the internet recently and found it. I think it was Don Hawk's... something Black Hawk in Chicago. It was just, again, incredible. And it's just not the ambiance of having it created at your table.
Yeah.
And then the delicacy, the memorable taste of it. I mean, again, I'm on in years. Like you say, we're in our back nine.
But
I still can taste on the tip of my tongue that salad.
I think that food and wine, to me, have the ability to, almost like a photograph, freeze a moment in time for you that you never forget if it's that good. I mean, I've had wines that I can describe to you. I can tell you where I was, who I was with. You know, music can do that too. I mean, I can, you know, the first time I heard Honky Tonk Woman, I was in Pepe's on Old Country Road, just south of...
That's a name from the past.
Yeah. And you know, Jumpin' Jack Flash, I was sitting on a rail outside of Bill's Luncheonette, you know, in Carl Place with a whole bunch of friends. It has the ability to freeze that moment for you, you know. I remember a rabbit, pappardelle in Italy, on a beautiful fall day, you know, sitting on a terrace at this winery drinking a reserve Chianti. With that, I can tell you who I was with, what time of day it was, what the weather was like. You know, it has that ability. And I think that the sense of smell and the sense of taste are two of the most privileged in the body. You know, it just allows you to kind of savor things. And it's getting back to what I said before, that live to eat, eat to live thing. You know, when you live to eat, you savor those moments of, you know, it's not just, oh, I'm starving, let me put something in my belly so I can keep going. It's like, hold on, let's take some time here. Let's, like, check this out. How do you make it? What does it look like? Do I need cheese? Don't I? How about some pepper? Whatever. So, you know, and you know, going back to what you said about the tableside, you know, salad, not only is it performance art, which is kind of fun, you know, which is lost now because most of the waiters are just delivery people, you know. But, you know, it's a difference from the owner's standpoint between a $10 Caesar salad and a $25 Caesar salad, you know? I mean, it's good economics, too, you know, when it comes to, you know.
Yeah, you know, again, the Caesar salad that you get today is, you know, creamy, cheesy dressing or whatever. But it's just not what a tableside Caesar is all about.
I was taught by a guy named Hugo Bua. And Hugo was he was quite a character. He was this very suave Italian, he called himself a prince. He had some kind of royalty thing going on. He was a prince, all right. He was a character and a half. Anyway, he had some restaurants on Long Island, but he was my instructor in CIA, my table service instructor, the first year I was there. And he used to make a Caesar salad, and at the end, he would take after he served you, he would take the bowl and lift it over his head upside down to prove that the dressing was so perfect there was nothing left in the bowl.
Wow!
And I'm thinking, boy, you better be on, you know. And he, like I said, he was this really good-looking, you know, thin in shape guy. I mean, he had women clamoring all over him, you know. And half the dining room was women just to see Hugo, you know. And I don't think he ever did anything about it, but he was just—he was a magnet, you know. He was a chick magnet, you know, kind of guy. So, but a character and a half, and he taught me all that tableside stuff, you know, so when I was a kid.
We're talking about favorite foods. I have an interesting dilemma. I'm not complaining, believe me. So this past Saturday, last night, mm-hmm. was actually my birthday.
Oh, really? Happy birthday.
Thank you. Thank you.
28 again?
Yes, yeah, pretty close. Yeah,
twice.
I'm choking. You got me so
emotionally
distraught.
Like Dr. Fauci over there.
So, but I had a really unique week leading up to my birthday. My office gang took me out to dinner to Chris and Tony's, I love Chris and Tony's.
Yeah,
again,
yeah.
There's just, they have a sauteed calamari. Most people get calamari that's
fried. Yeah.
This is sauteed in a almost like a fra diavolo broth.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they serve it with shrimp and the calamari. Sometimes they actually serve it on a bed of spinach, and it's just part of the whole thing. And they have a bolognese that I'm usually get with an angel hair, which is all wrong because angel hair and bolognese don't go together.
No.
But they have the collapsed large rigatoni,
Bacchieri,
which is incredible. So I had that for dinner.
I've never heard it described that way, the collapsed rigatoni.
Well, it is.
I'm just saying. It's a flowery explanation. You're
living the world of stew.
Yeah, I forgot for a second.
But leading up, so, you know, we had a 6 o'clock dinner, and previous to that, we went to one of the finest Asian restaurants on Long Island, which is O Mandarin in Hicksville.
Yeah.
I talk about
Chinese
it. It's the
place.
Corner of Wantore Avenue, Wantore Parkway.
Yeah,
and Old Country Road. So I wasn't looking to step on the scale thereafter.
No.
But you talk about, you know, favorite foods and you know, and then the day after this morning I had my other one of my favorites is a nice bagel with cream cheese and lox. But I found a new option. So usually again it's a scooped out crisp. Not toasted, crisply baked.
It's easy for you to say.
Steve. Bagel, scooped out, and I used to put scallion cheese on it, but I found it to be redundant, and because I put lox, tomato, and onion on it.
A lot of onion.
So I said, doing the scallion again in my head, all of a sudden became duplicative.
Yes.
So I was at Bagel Boss the other day, and they came up with a new solution for me. They actually have a cream cheese that's scallion cheese with lox bits in it.
Mm-hmm.
So now I don't have to go and get my $20 bagel.
Look at you. You found a better way.
Yeah. And I found a way to use the scallion cheese.
There you go.
And it was a $4 investment.
You should have a podcast on bagels. Write a manual.
You know, and then, you know, I guess the pièce de résistance would have been to go to Ben's later in the day and have a hot dog with mustard and sauerkraut.
I love Ben's, man. I tell you, that's to me, that's a half a pastrami sandwich, a bowl of the mushroom barley, and an order of kasha varnichkis. And then I got to go to the couch and sleep for about there, like a bear, you know.
And that reminds me of a great session of Playing with Fire we had recently with Ronnie from
Well,
Ben's.
You know, it's funny. I haven't really been eating it. I've been kind of on a protein kick because I'm trying to drop a little weight. And I only fluctuate about 10 pounds either way, you know, depending on the season. But I actually had a toe sighting the other day, you know, which was kind of unusual. You know, I'm like, whoa, I'm making some progress here, you know.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good. So getting back into the horticulture, agriculture of Long Island. So we're talking about fresh tomatoes, and you talked about the seasonality of it or whatever.
Yeah.
I was reading in Food and Wine, they had a thing about canned tomatoes.
Right.
And I don't know if you're going to fall off your chair or throw something at me, but I
have a few things I can fling. Yeah.
But they went on to say canned tomatoes are a top choice for cooking because they are packed at peak ripeness, taste great all year, and save time. Whole peeled, diced, and crushed varieties offer flexibility for many meals. and opinions on the best specific brands vary. So what's your take on that? I mean, in the article going further into it, they just said, you know, you're trying to throw together a quick meal. Mm-hmm. You know, you're getting home from work. You don't have a lot of time. Here's a way to cheat but not hurt the recipe.
Yeah, yeah. I you know, canned tomatoes have their place, obviously. You know, marinara. You know, it's very few people that are going to make a fresh tomato sauce with, you know, starting with tomatoes. You got to peel them. They're already peeled. You know, and if you buy a high quality tomato like San Marzano or something like that, yeah, it's going to make a, you know, it's perfectly fine. You know, I use them all the time. I use them for tomato sauce and you know, things like that. I don't really, you know, you can't use them for like, you know, if you have a sauce that's got like chopped tomato in it, you know, sometimes you'll do, trying to think of a sauce offhand.
A pomodoro?
No, that's fine. Yeah, that's all chopped tomato, generally canned tomatoes. But, you know, when I make I never made a chicken piccata in my life until I got to the club, right? And so it's kind of just chicken with like lemon and capers. So we add artichokes and tomatoes to it, you know, just to kind of gussy it up and make it a little fuller or whatever and more interesting. And like that, you couldn't put canned tomatoes in that sauce because that sauce is basically lemon juice and butter, you know, for the most part. And it would bleed in, it would turn it pink. It's just not good. But, you know, use half cherry tomatoes in there. So in that case, in a situation like that, the canned tomatoes wouldn't work. But every other, you know, sauce that I hate to use the term vodka sauce, marinara, you know, pomodoro, all of that, the canned tomatoes are fine, you know. And just, you know, you got to kind of find a brand. I mean, like I said, I don't shop at supermarkets, so I don't really know. But I can tell you that the San Marzano tomatoes tend to be a little
And they talk better. About that in the article.
Yeah, yeah. They tend to be a little better than just the Acme, you know, variety. But if you're a talented cook, you can coax flavor out of anything. I mean, you know, the bottom line is a marinara to me. I mean, people say, oh, my grandmother cooked her sauce for 17 hours or whatever. If you're doing a meat sauce or something like that, maybe. But when I make marinara, I don't cook it for more than 25 minutes or half an hour.
That's interesting, but so I have to assume that the simmering pot of tomato sauce at Nona's mm-hmm. On Sunday was all about the brajol and the meatballs stuff, yeah, and the sausage.
Exactly, exactly. Gotcha. But, you know, even like when I make meatballs, I don't cook them in the sauce, you know, until later. I mean, I cook them in, when I make meatballs, here's a pro tip. I'll cover them with tomato juice. You know, like Sacramento tomato juice or whatever, you know, and then I'll roast them separately because, I mean, to me, I make 170 meatballs at a time to try and find a pot, you know, and then babysit them and make sure they're not falling apart or whatever. It's too much of a pain in the neck. So we just roast them in the oven, you know, and then put them in the sauce later.
So you mentioned artichoke, and that reminds me of a pet peeve. I love artichokes. I mean, when you get the marinated ones, I mean, it's all about the dressing,
the vinegar,
you know, but the artichoke heart is very soft and it can be crisp, but it's got a nice texture, but sometimes the leaves, like when you go to a I was at a catering hall the other night and they had, I don't know, lack of a better term, a grazing table, and they had some artichokes in a bowl is one of the things.
The big ones? Or
no, just not, the hearts, right? This was the smaller part, the stem part cut off or whatever. Right. But it's like a skin. It's stringy. Yeah. What should be delightful all of a sudden isn't. And I guess sometimes it's the outer leaves that are...
Well, they're not trimming them enough, you know?
Oh, thank you.
That's the thing. You know, there's tough outer leaves, especially with babies. You got to cut the top off because it's pointy there. You don't want that. And you got to peel it down.
Sometimes like eating a rose bush.
Exactly what it is. And then, you know, you got to take those dark leaves off until you get the white.
And then you go to the roasted artichokes, which usually is the pieces that have the stem and everything, which is nice. Again, you'll laugh at me. I find that many times the way they prepare it, it's just too salty. And I don't know if that's it's not pickling, but it's the, Would you say marinating for a salad? Or
yeah, probably. You must have the nicest ankles in the world. You don't get any swelling at all because no salt for you. I'm going to check your ankles before we leave here.
So, again, just this thing with the canned tomatoes or whatever. One recipe I was looking at talked about a tomato chutney.
Chutney. Yeah.
What is that?
Chutney's kind of like it's like a sauce, but it's usually a little firmer. You know, it's like, how would I describe a chutney? I mean, it's cooked down, so it's reduced. So it's like almost pasty, you know, like tomato. I would make a tomato chutney. I do a tomato and ginger jam, which is essentially a chutney. And it's usually, you know, got some vegetables in it, onion, this, that, and the other thing. I use ginger. I use a little bit of garlic in there and some brown sugar, you know, to kind of sweeten it up. But, yeah, chutney can be, you know, they make it a lot with fruit. Tomatoes are fruit, you know. But they make it a lot with, you know, I use sun-dried tomatoes sometimes. You know, we do mango, all kinds of interesting little fruits for that. So it's basically just a sauce, and it's usually served cold. You know, it's usually served on top of something, like a piece of tuna or a piece of chicken. And, you know, you can flavor it however you want. I like a sweet and sour flavor, you know, vinegar and sugar. So it balances the fruit itself, which is kind of fun.
Interesting.
It's almost like it's a condiment, you know. It's basically a condiment, like ketchup would be a mustard, but it's, you know, chunkier and it has broader shoulders.
Gotcha. So, again, while flipping through food and wine, then they came up with an article about how to cook a perfect pot of rice.
Mm-hmm.
And what's your directive on that?
Well, I just generally do pilaf and variations of. I watch the Spanish guys. They're funny. They, you know, they're rice experts since they eat a lot of rice, right? And what they do is they'll take the rice and put it in a pan with water and wash it, you know, and they get all the, I guess, the stuff off it, you know. And the Japanese do that, too, before they make the fluffy rice. I don't do that. I basically take an onion, saute the onion down, right, and then I hit it with a little bit of white wine, not much, just a very little bit. I reduce that down. Then I add the rice, and I add just less than twice the amount of rice with chicken stock. So if you have a cup of rice, I use like a cup and 3/4 of chicken stock. The recipe that they give you usually says two times. I find that a little bit too much, and I think the rice gets a little too soft. So I cut that back a little bit, and then you just kind of let it go until it evaporates, and you got it.
This article talks about the ratio of rice to water and things like that.
Most of it's 2-1, they'll tell you. I do 1 3/4 to 1.
And some of that has to do with the starch content? Or?
Well, it depends. I mean, you know, there's different kinds of rice. I'm just talking about pilaf. Mm-hmm. If you're going to talk about, let's say, you know, risotto, you know, which there's 3 kinds of rices you can use for risotto. You can use Carnaroli, you can use Villa Nano, or you can use Arborio. Most people use Arborio. It's the more popular of the 3. And that you have to kind of keep making additions into the, you know, you basically need to add boiling stock to the rice and stir it. And it probably takes, you know, 4 or 5 times the amount.
When you're talking about preparing rice, for some reason, saffron rice comes to mind.
And saffron is just it's the pistol of a flower. It's actually more expensive than heroin, you know, when you think about it, because it's so little weight there, you know. But it basically has a flavor, and it turns everything bright yellow. You know,
it just comes in like in a small can?
Yeah, they usually come in cans.
And then you do like a pinch of it? And
yeah, there's these little like threads, you know. But it's the pistil of a flower, a certain flower, mostly in Spain.
Is it just color or it actually flavor?
It does have a flavor. Yeah, it does have a flavor. And most people don't add enough. You gotta kind of, you know, the problem is it's expensive and people are worried about using it. It's precious, you know. But if you're going to use it, just do it, you know, put it in there.
So now we come full circle. So the article in the this month's edition was talking about, like, tomatoes, was mm-hmm. talking about rice and mixing them together with some beans and some sort of green vegetable. I don't remember what it was. But it almost becomes like a stew.
Yeah, well, rice is fun. I mean, you know, listen, it's fed the world for, you know, centuries, right? I mean, look at China and, you know, in Japan. I mean, rice is, in the Middle East, it's a central part of the food culture there, you know? I think you can put, you know, we do a what we call a jambalaya rice with, you know, red and yellow peppers and some sausage and things like that, you know, kind of a New Orleans take on it, a little chili powder. There's a million things you can do. I mean, rice is that perfect vehicle for, you know, using up leftovers. You know, look at arroz con pollo, right? Rice and chicken. It's fed half of the Latin world forever, you know, and it's basically just chicken parts cooked in the rice itself. Paella is another, you know, Spanish thing. It's fed half of Spain.
When you
cook
the chicken in the rice, doesn't the like the marrow from the bone, like, suck into the flavor profile?
I don't think that happens because the bones aren't generally cracked open, okay, you know. But you may get a little bit of that. But I don't think there's an awful lot of marrow in chicken bones.
So let's take this home to summer. Rice, tomatoes. You think of salads and, you know, you got your potato salad, coleslaw, macaroni salad.
Mm-hmm. Which nobody eats anymore, by the way.
Right. Well, that's very funny to say that. And then you usually see a rice dish or a pasta, a cold rice dish or a pasta dish.
Yeah, yeah. I like, you know, rice salads. If you have an imagination and you can play with flavors, like I used to make this curried rice salad, you know, with some Madras curry, not the Thai curry, the more the Middle Eastern curry. And it's kind of fun, but, you know, the problem is people have certain perceptions about food. And it's leaving that, like older people, you can't get their soup hot enough. It's if it's not 214 degrees, you know. I used to have this guy, Sidney Feldstein, who was the biggest pain in the you-know-what in the history of restaurants. He was absolutely the worst customer ever. He was in Cool Fish every day for lunch. We couldn't wait for him to come in. We absolutely loved this guy. He was the most cantankerous. I mean, but he was like a Catskills comedian. He was hilarious, you know, in his anger. And one, you know, his whole thing was the soup isn't hot enough. It was never hot enough, right? So we brought him a bowl of soup one day. He looks at it and he goes, "It's not hot enough." And Diane, the waitress, goes, "Sidney, you haven't even tasted it yet. What? All of a sudden, today he's serving hot soup? 300 times I come in here, 300 times the soup is cold, and today, all of a sudden, he's got hot soup. Take it back, it's cold." It was hilarious, you know? But a lot of people don't want, you know, they think of rice as a hot kind of dish, you know? Rice salad's a hard sell.
So I want to extract something out of this story. Somehow we're talking about tomatoes and rice and summer dining. So we talk about age, and I guess my birthday brought it up. But in the past week, two very funny stories. So I'm at the Embassy Diner.
We had a
breakfast meeting, and I had been there before, you know, like 8:30 type of thing. And a veteran comes in, and the reason I knew he was a veteran, he had his hat on and stuff.
Right.
Somehow he parked in the parking lot, got out of his car, and managed to come in to the restaurant through the back door, which is like the handicap access.
Yeah,
I didn't see him get out of the car, and so I don't know how long the journey was to get to the restaurant, but this person was very frail. And literally, once he got into the diner, had to be escorted to a table. And you mentioned Gus, the owner of the restaurant. He is the most giving person. Apparently, this veteran comes in every morning for breakfast, and Gus puts him at a table and serves him complimentary his breakfast.
Nice.
But I don't understand how this individual travels alone and again, drives, gets out of his car on his own. Once he gets into the restaurant, has some issues.
Yeah,
God bless him, and long, long live your life, please.
Yeah, sure.
You think in life people say they have troubles, There's a lot to worry about in life, but this guy has the determination to get to the diner every morning for his breakfast. Then I I'm a member of the board of directors of the Nassau County Police Reserves,
right,
which is an organization of businessmen that support police families, mm-hmm, with scholarships for their children and any stressful scenarios.
Good stuff.
We make a donation to the family. And we had a dinner the other night at Westbury Manor. An older gentleman, had to probably be 85 to 90, comes in with his walker, I think it was,
mm-hmm,
somehow gets into the lobby, and then, of course, the most beautiful women are all there to help him get to where he has to go. So
it's good to know. I'm getting to be older.
Yeah, there you go. So he comes in on his walker, and then he needed to rest.
Yeah.
So he stops what he's doing right at the entrance to the check-in area,
yeah,
and sits down. And you're trying to be polite and understanding to him, but like, this is at the beginning of the evening. People were coming to check in and then go into the cocktail hour.
Sure.
And this gentleman...
this is coming up the works.
just blocked everything.
Yeah, yeah.
Again, all the drama of trying to maneuver inside the catering hall, I don't know how he got out of his house, got into his car, and got into this situation. And then the quagmire at the end of the evening is he's sitting there, and who's going to get him?
You're back to the car.
Right. But but again, there can't be always somebody there. Again, kudos to these people, because there could be nothing worse, and they probably wouldn't live the life they have led if they were stranded in their home and didn't get out.
Yeah, it's got to be great for them.
But it's like, I just know as my father got older and his mobility or whatever
shrunk
as he did, because he kept getting shorter.
Well, we all do, right?
But I just have to also make mention, we're talking about tough times or whatever. So I met a gentleman recently, Eddie Park, and his daughter, Lindsay Rose Park, was the volunteer firefighter in Franklin Square that was killed in an auto accident.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I heard about that.
She was like 20-something years old, and she was in a car with a, in quotes, boyfriend, I believe, and another friend. And it wasn't a typical driving scenario. There was the driver was doing shenanigans. What do they call it? Donuts. And
oh boy.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Well, the car ended up in the middle of a tree.
Eesh.
And you know, the family's devastated.
Yeah,
I mean,
I'm sure.
This was, every loss is important, uh-huh, in life, but I guess what stands out on this one is this was a girl that just gave back a lot to the community, a volunteer firefighter.
Yeah.
Her legend, her legacy, strongly lives on by a lot of charitable projects the family has been doing. Mm-hmm. But also, she worked for my friend Joe Matone, who is a Dunkin' Donuts franchise owner.
Right.
And so we hear about Lindsay so often. But we were in a group chat last night, and it was just one of those nights where there was a lot of pain.
Mm.
And, you know, everybody wants to always be the hero to their family or the strength to their family. And my group of friends, we always try to be there for Eddie when he has these weak moments, because we don't want him to do anything not sound.
Right.
And at the same time, he wants to be there to continue to lead the family from it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just amazing, you know, again, you wonder in life, and we've talked to priests and rabbis and stuff, and you say, you know, why do bad things happen to good people?
Yeah,
and
yeah,
there's all these theories that you have to have bad to understand good. But this scenario hits hard, and especially since last night this group text was going on. But I guess the message I'm just trying to get out to people is that either from loss or even mental health issues, everybody needs to understand that there might be somebody in their life or in their circle of friends or family that needs help. And you have to hope that you put out a receptive aura so that people can come to you when there is trauma.
Sure, yeah.
And hopefully everybody can be there for each other.
Yeah. No, it's critical. I mean, you know, friends are important, friends and family. I mean, you know, above and beyond that, what do we have? You know, acquaintances and strangers, you know? So let's, like, hook into the people that we love and know and, you know, make sure they're okay.
And it makes me think, here at WHLI over the years, we used to have listener parties and mm-hmm. stuff. And it was usually for the retired section of our listenership because... at that time, and I'm going back when we had Dean Anthony and I forget Paul's last name, but
they have all their pictures on the wall.
Yeah, yeah. But so the people would come out during the day, and they'd be so excited, and we forget that you and I, being a little younger, you know, we get invited to family events, we go to dinners with friends, this, that, and the other. Mm-hmm. But as you get older, your resources of friends,
shrinks. Yeah, of course.
So this is. For them, this was a big deal. Yeah. And I loved walking around with a big smile and greeting the people because you forget that they're sometimes home yeah. with nothing to do.
No, by themselves, yeah. They say visit the sick and, you know, make sure everybody's good. You know, they say that, you know, your biggest regrets are not spending that time, you know, when you're on your deathbed. You know, you're not thinking about that job offer I had or, you know, that.
Well, that's one of my mantras in life. I'm not the adventurous type that has a bucket list of, you know, climbing Mount Fuji or whatever.
Yeah, don't do that.
But my mantra is just to be there for people and,
sure.
and enjoy life. And I'm spoiled because many times I'll complain, you know, I got four places to be tonight or whatever.
Too much salt.
And there you go. But it's very funny. I go back to the event that I went to there and was sitting, I call it a living room conversation. And when you have a celebrity, whatever, celebrities are no different than you and I or whatever, but they have stories that they share that are interesting. Mm-hmm. So I said to Chad Smith, I said, hey, do you have a bucket list, you know, of things you still want to do? He goes, well, tonight I get to cross one thing off the list, talking to you.
There you go. Hey, so can I promote a couple of restaurants?
Please.
Here? I was at a place the other night in just opened up in Garden City called The James. And they have another one. I think they own a couple of restaurants. They own The James in Babylon. They own that one in Northport, Arlo. Same people. So they opened up The James. And it was in the Prime House location on Franklin Avenue.
Oh, that closed.
It closed, and it reopened as The James, and they did a complete renovation on the inside, which, you know,
an upstairs and a downstairs there?
Yeah, a little bit. So they did this renovation, and I'm looking at the renovation going, oh God, I hope they get this back, you know, because I know how much money it takes to do this stuff, right? And a protege of mine, Lenny Campanelli, who, you know, he trained with me for years, and then he worked as my chef, and then he was my partner for a while in the restaurant out east. A very talented guy on his own. I mean, like I said, we gave him some basic training and whatever, but he's his own man, and he does a great job there. Food's very good. I had a meal there the other night. And if you're over in that area in Garden City called The James, my manager, who was with me 25 years, Diane, is working there, Diane Flynn, and Lenny Campanelli, the chef. Check it out. It's fabulous. Another place I went in, and this is going to sound a little self-serving, but I had one of the best meals of the year, if not the last 5 years. In Southall Social, I took my grandkids and my daughter and her husband to Southall Social the other day on a lark. I told the kids we were going to go on a pub crawl, and they're like, what's that, Paco? And I said, well, we're going to go have appetizers in a couple different restaurants. So they were all down for that. And Courtney and Kyle met us later. But, you know, I have a couple of cooks in there who, kind of, you know, culinarily cocky, you know, kids, like we all were at that age. And I was... You know, whenever I go into one of my own places, I go in, like, with my shoulders up, and I'm like, I'm hoping this is going to be good because I haven't been here in a little bit, you know. And I got to tell you, they killed it. Did a great job, you know. It was busy, and, you know, it was – that's always the test, you know. If everything comes out good when you're busy, it's chances are it's better when it's slow. But, yeah, they did a great job. So if you're in the neighborhood, like I said, it's a little bit self-serving because it is my place, but – Southall Social, they're doing a great job out there. If you're in the neighborhood, stop by and say hello. Tell them you know me or you listen to the show, and I'm sure they'll take great care of you. And then I told you last week I was at Trento. in Farmingdale here.
Yes.
They did a good job, man. It was really nice people. And, you know, the manager was so accommodating. Food was good. You know, we had a great time. So I'm up and down on the restaurant world these days. It's a very difficult time to be in the restaurant business. It's as challenging as I've ever seen it. And like I said, I've been at this since 1968. So I've seen a lot of ups and downs, a lot of economic upturns and downturns and trends and fads and stuff that go into the restaurant business because I've been a student forever. But this is as challenging as it gets. And the other hand, I'm optimistic. You know, I was at Uncle Frank's the other day in Wantagh. Every meal I've ever had there is great, you know, and it's the same guys that own Blackbird. It's Chris, you know, the chef there. He's a very talented kid. He's one of the few unsung heroes in the restaurant business on Long Island at the moment.
It's two of them. It's a Frank and Chris.
I don't know. I guess Frank,
I think they're brother-in-laws or something.
Is that what it is? Yeah. But Chris, he does the food, and the food's always on point at Blackbird. It's always on point at Uncle Frank's. He owns place in Woodbury, too,
Rustic Root.
And he told me he was opening another one in Smithtown, you know. So he's on a roll. He's doing a great job, great work. I hope he gets great people because it's hard to find people to work. But, yeah, another restaurant group that you should take a look at. If you're ever in that Wantagh area, Blackbird is great. And, you know, Uncle Frank's, to me, it's an inexpensive, relatively inexpensive place to go for, you know, weeknight stuff. You got good pastas, pizzas. You know, I had some textbook baked clams the other night, which it's kind of my guilty pleasure, you know. And then we had a pizza that was fun. And
I'm laughing because I was at a catering hall this past week, and they were serving all the usual hors d'oeuvres, hors d'oeuvres.
Yeah.
But they came with baked clams, and I swear there was no utensil.
No, you need three hands now.
I mean, what were you supposed to,
slurp it?
But if you're sitting at a table having raw bar, you know, you pick it up and you.
Of course,
But a baked clam?
Yeah, you get breadcrumbs all over your shirt, you know. No, it's not a thing you should serve as an hors d'oeuvre unless you're serving it with a fork, and then you got the plate, the clam, the fork, and you drink. Now what? You know what I mean?
So when you talk about the restaurant group, real quick, when you talk about, I think the word is lineage, when you have
lineage,
when you have
lineage.
Lineage. Okay, thank you. Thank you, grammar school teacher.
Yeah, I'm like Funkin' Wagnall over here.
So Borelli's in East Meadow, across the street from the Coliseum.
Well.
It's been there forever.
Yeah.
So now one of the cousins opened up Borelli's tap room in Long Beach.
Really?
So here you have something that's been around forever, uh-huh. And now there's a new incarnation.
Yeah.
And they've been doing an incredible job. It's sort of a bar, you know,
my ex-wife
whatever,
used to work there,
whatever a tap room is supposed to be. Oh, really?
Yeah, really.
So this is in Long Beach now, and it's on the West End. I was there Sunday. They had a. They do a lot of country stuff.
Do they?
Country is a whole new entertainment opportunity for people. But they had a local artist, Anthony Gass, who I guess put out a new song. He'd done some stuff with our sister station here, 103.1 The Wolf. But it's really cool to see that there's continuation of a brand.
Yeah.
And again, as we come to the end of the show, I just wanted to remind everybody that to communicate with Tom and I, there's an email address, fire@whli.com, fire@whli.com. And there's even a growing Facebook page for Playing with Fire, if you can find it on the
thanks to Bill O'Leary.
Wide World Web.
All right, we're going to end the show with Tom's three keys to life like normal. Life is too short to drink bad wine. Treat every meal like it was your last, please, and keep chocolate in your life as important as sex and pizza.
Come on now, everybody, get ready for a treat. It's time for stepping out for something mighty good to eat. You looking for atmosphere? Well, they got it happening here. They're doing barbecue the way it ought to be. Bring your sister, brother, sibling, and other. Bring all your pals. They're
There's always something smoking at Smoking Al's.
It's summer, and it's time for Smoking Al's Party Catering Menu. Make your next party a smoking one with Al's ribs, barbecue meats, chicken, appetizers, and a whole lot more. Try Al's new fantasy platters in the comfort of your backyard or one of Al's party packages. With the hot weather upon us, your party's going to be smoking. Smoking Al's Massapequa Park. Call 516-799-4900. And remember, there's always something smoking at Smoking Al's.
There's always something smoking at Smoking Al's.
Saving money on everything for your next project. Now at Menards. Menards has a huge selection of bagged concrete and mortar mixes. Whether you're pouring a walkway, concrete slab, or setting a post, we have the right product at the best price to complete your project. Shop our entire selection of concrete mixes and supplies in-store and on Menards.com. Plus, check out the weekly flyer for more great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Save big money on your summer project at Menards. Transform your garage with rock-solid floor coatings. Complete your project with a showroom-quality finish in one weekend. A one-car kit covers up to 250 square feet. Get everything you need to complete your project with rock-solid floor coatings. Our knowledgeable team is ready to help bring your dreams to life, 1 gallon at a time. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I got to say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August is finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.